Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, April 12th, 2014. This is episode 1073. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and unfiltered. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code TG20. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Apple and Android devices are worth at gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk computers and the internet, smartphones, home theater, digital photography, and of course, digital security. Let me give you the phone number, then we'll talk about Heartbleed. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. 888-827-5536. The website is techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. And as you probably know, because it was widely covered in the mainstream media. Oh, I guess this is mainstream media. I'm so used to being a podcaster, I forget. It was kind of half stream, kind of middle stream media, because it was a half mainstream but half geek stream. I guess it's mainstream. So, but as you've heard on the other mainstream media, there is a really kind of pretty nasty security hole in the software that's used by many websites to protect your privacy. The sites, as you know, we've talked before, if you're using e-banking or online commerce, you're usually on a secure connection. It'll say HTTPS, that's for secure. Or, you know, on older browsers, you'd get a lock and key and the key's closed. There are various ways of indicating it's a secure connection. And, you know, we've really encouraged sites to do that for years. Our tech, you know, security gurus have said, please just turn it on. There's no reason not to. Many sites use open source software for the website. That's browsers like Apache or Nginx. And they also, in many cases, use a library. This is very frequently the case. You don't write this stuff from scratch, especially crypto. It's hard to do right. So they use a library called OpenSSL, Secure Socket Layer. And it turns out for two years, there's been a pretty nasty bug in this library. And it's estimated about two-thirds of all the websites out there are using it. So this bug, and we're not really sure how it got in there. It was added to the OpenSSL library on a New Year's Eve a couple of years ago, New Year's Eve 2011. And there's some curiosity about who put it there and why. I've seen stories now, and I don't know if it's substantiated, that our own federal government, the NSA, has been using this flaw, the security bug, for all that time. Some might even, I think there's good cause to think this might even have been done by them. Maybe not, though, because it doesn't give you the kind of access. If you're a spy, you really want better access than this. What this bug allows a rogue site to do or a rogue page to do is read the memory of the server to look what's in. Imagine if they could read your memory, huh? What would be revealed? They can't read it all at once. They can only read a small chunk, 64K at a time. But it leaves no trace, and it can do it over and over and again. And most servers aren't recording that this is happening. And so it could have been happening for 2 years since we didn't know about this bug. So let's say I'm a bad guy, and I really want to start collecting Facebook passwords. Facebook, one of the companies that seems to be using this, Twitter and Google as well, this flawed software. So let's say I'm a bad guy and I want to just kind of collect Facebook stuff. I can read 64K. I can't specify which 64K or even what's, you know, I can't tell them what I want. I can just read it. And I could do it again and again and again over a long period of time. After a while, you might start garnering some interesting information. You'd certainly see people logging in. You'd see the passwords probably in the clear. So it would be a good way to collect that. You'd also be able to compromise the security certificate that's used by that site. So that's another avenue of attack. Then a bad guy knowing that information could pretend to be Facebook and could perpetrate something called a man-in-the-middle attack, where you think you're going to Facebook, you're not. You go into the bad guy's site, and then he's passing it on to Facebook, meanwhile collecting what you're doing. So that's the kind of thing. I guess Facebook's probably not a good example. Your bank might be a better example. Most banks for 2 years, or many banks for 2 years, have just been vulnerable to this. They can grab 64K at a time. The question is whether this has been done at all, who's been doing it, and how much value they're getting from it. And I think the first thing I'd say, although you'll see a lot of media reports and kind of a lot of scare tactics, don't panic. It doesn't mean that somebody, you can't, for instance, go to your bank and say, give me all the passwords and all the accounts. You can't. And we don't know yet how widespread this is. It might not have been at all. But it's not a bad thing to change your passwords. It's a bit of a task. I think Tumblr, who was compromised, Tumblr said, take the day off and change all your passwords. I don't think you should really take the day off work and change all your passwords. However, there are a few passwords you might want to change. And it's not a bad idea to do it from time to time anyway. This would be a great time to kind of get your whole password thing in line, your password strategy in line. I would suggest, for instance, that we start using something called LastPass. This is a free product that's really good. I use it. If you've been using LastPass all along, you really are safer than most people because you can do a security audit now on your LastPass passwords, and it'll tell you which ones you need to change. There is one little thing about changing the passwords that's kind of relevant. If the bank or the email server or the site you want to fix hasn't yet fixed the hole, then the bad guy can continue to get your password. They have to fix it before changing your password makes any sense. A lot of sites have said it, but most banks aren't even talking about this. They prefer not to. Imagine if you're, a big bank, you don't want to tell your customers, we don't know what's happened, but maybe you should change your password. That's just going to scare people. So it's not a bad idea. There's a lot of misinformation floating around, a lot of scary stuff. Listen to me, because I've really checked this out with all our security experts, and I've done a lot of reading, and I think without a doubt that the right advice is it never hurts to change your password. Here's a good time to go out, get LastPass, because I bet you there are other security things that you're doing that are worse. For instance, having the same password for multiple websites, that's probably worse, probably more risky. Not having good passwords, that's really risky. And I think we underestimate how good a good password is. You say, well, I've got my kid's birthday mixed with my maiden name. Nobody could guess that. Well, yeah, you might be surprised. A good password is long and really random and combines numbers, upper and lowercase letters, and if the site allows you, and some don't, but if the site allows you, special characters like percent and dollar sign and things like that. The more random, the longer, the better. Now, what's nice about LastPass is you can go through your sites one by one and change the passwords and make them random. LastPass will give you good, strong, random passwords. Make them 16 or 20 characters, and they'll be really random, and you'll say, well, I can't remember that. You don't have to. LastPass does. It stores it safely and securely. So it'll generate a new password for you that's good, and it'll keep track of it. You do have to remember one password. That's your LastPass password. The other nice thing about LastPass is you can put it on everything, Windows and Mac. You can put it on your Android device and your iPhone. It's everywhere. And LastPass is implemented correctly so that even though they were vulnerable to Heartbleed and they fixed it right away, at no point was anybody's information compromised because LastPass doesn't know your passwords. Only you do. And only you can get them. So there are other password managers, and it's fine to use those. That's better. Absolutely. 1Pass. There's tons of them. But I like LastPass. I pay $1 a month for the premium just because it's good. Now, it's a little complicated. What I'm going to do is put it up on the website. It's not up there yet, but I'll put it up in the next couple of days. A kind of a primer on how to do LastPass. But right now, you want it installed on all your browsers because it fills in passwords automatically. It will generate new passwords for you on sites, making that easy to do. The other thing that'll protect you, and it's a good idea, is two-factor authentication. And most of the big sites now, including most banks, will allow you to have a second, number texted to you. And that's that is absolutely better. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's not free, it's freemium. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. You can ask questions if you want about Heartbleed or anything that's on your mind, technology of any kind, chips and all of that stuff. I've been saying on the show for 5 years, get LastPass and do real passwords and strong passwords, and I understand. It's really also a problem on mobile, because on mobile, if you have a 20-character, really random password, typing it on mobile is a nightmare. I understand that. LastPass actually makes it easier because you can copy the password and then paste it in. So now that everybody has copy and paste on the mobile platforms, it's not so bad. And I tell you, I use it. And let me underscore how important second-factor authentication is. If you have second-factor turned on, and I'll explain what two-factor authentication is in a second, but if you have it turned on, you don't have to worry at all. That's not been compromised. So here's what two-factor authentication. You should still change your password, but it's nothing to panic about. The idea of authentication is, the whole idea of a password is to prove you are who you say you are, right? So you go to your bank and you need to tell them, I'm me, so I can transfer money. And this is a big issue, is authentication, this whole notion of authentication. In fact, anytime we have a transaction, authentication's everything. When you go to a store and use a credit card, they ask for a driver's license. They want to really identify that it's you using it, right? That's the whole issue on money transfers. So I cash, when I give you a dollar, you know it's me, and that's a real dollar. So we don't have to worry about it. But as we move to a cashless society, we do more electronic stuff, more online stuff, authentication becomes the big issue. Authentication is simply proving you are who you say you are. Now, there are several ways to do this. You can do it with something you know, that only you know. A password's a good example. I've memorized this magic passphrase, and only I know it. And so if I give you the passphrase correctly, it's got to be me. Well, you can see the flaw in this. If, for instance, you use your social security number as a password, they used to do that. Well, unfortunately, you may not be the only one who knows that. Passwords can be leaked, as in this case, accidentally by the other side, right? There are all sorts of problems with passwords, but that's the most common form of authentication. You can make authentication better by using two forms. So there's three total possibilities. There's something you know, like a password, something you have, like your cell phone, and something you are, like biometrics, like a fingerprint. If we mix two different forms of authentication, that makes it more than twice as effective. So that's why initially these happened as dongles. Maybe you've seen these little keychain dongles that VeriSign and others, sometimes your company will give you one. You press a button on it, it gives you a 6-digit number. That's something you have. Now, by itself, it's not better than a password. But the two together are great, right? I have a password and this second-factor authentication. It's great. Fingerprint would be good, too. A super secure facility, you might do all three. A password, a code card, and biometrics. Measure your hand or your irises or your fingerprint. All three. Now we're really talking secure. There are facilities that require all three. I think two is good. And there are a couple of ways to do that, something you have. One would be to have a dongle, sometimes it's a credit card, that generates a number. The way this works is actually very simple. You have a secret number, a very long secret number that's yours, you know, and the receiving party knows. In fact, they give it to you. And then they take that secret number and they mush it around with the current time. And as long as your two devices are pretty much in sync within 30 seconds of each other, you're both going to get the same number. So I have this little card. I tell the bank, this is the serial number of the card. Now they know what my secret number is. We both know exactly what time it is. We mush it around and we get a 6-digit number. If my six-digit number on that card matches the six-digit number the bank expects, they say, bingo, you're in. Combine that with a password, really good. You may also see my bank, for instance, doesn't do it that way. They send me a text message. Same idea. Actually, they can generate that six-digit number any way they want. I don't have to know how. I just have to get the text message. But that proves I have my phone. So I had something I know, my password, plus something I have my phone. Those two things together are much more secure. Now, of course, if your password's been compromised, then it's no longer two-factor. It's simply one factor. However, the bad guy still needs your phone or that dongle to get into your bank account. So you don't have to panic. It'd still be worth changing it. In fact, it's not a bad idea to periodically change all your passwords. That's why I think a lot of companies are saying, just change it. We don't know how serious this is. It probably isn't. It's an ugly bug. It's an ugly bug, and it's potentially very serious, but we just don't know. We don't know, you know, how much stuff has been stolen by the bad guys or whether it was useful to them or who was doing it. So it's sensible to err on the side of prudence here. Get a password manager, LastPass. Start generating good long passwords. That's going to improve your security more than anything else. Replace your passwords on your bank, on Amazon, the eBay, e-commerce sites that you use, PayPal. Replace your password on Twitter, Google, Yahoo, Facebook. And then on sites that allow two-factor, turn it on. I know it's a little less convenient, but it's not horrible. Facebook does it, Twitter does it, Tumblr does it, Google does it. Really important that you secure your email, because most websites have an email recovery system, a password recovery system that goes to that email address. So if a bad guy can get into your email, then he or she can just go somewhere and say, I lost my password. Could you send me a new one? And they've got your email, and they go, oh, yeah, thank you. And they can change your password. So very important, probably number one thing to secure is your email. And it's a good idea every few months to change your email password. Because if it does leak out, the bad guy can be getting your email without you knowing. He can just check it whenever he feels like it. And you'll never know. So change that password anyway. This is an opportunity. Spend a little time this weekend changing the passwords. You don't have to change it on everything, just on the stuff that you need to keep secure. Credit cards, banking, e-commerce. And it probably would be a good idea to keep an eye on your statements from those sites for the next few months. You should be doing that anyway, right? And any unexpected charges you should pay attention to. But honestly, it's not a time to panic. It's just an opportunity to kind of get your passwords in order. Authentication is so important. We don't want to mess around with that. You want to be able to say, I'm me, without in any way there being any risk of somebody else saying they're you successfully. That's really the bottom line. Authentication is about proving you are who you say you are so that you can exchange money and exchange information. And if you don't want other people to have access to your stuff, your money, your information, then make sure you have a good password. And if that site allows it, and every bank should, turn on second-factor authentication. And if your bank doesn't, ask them why not. Banks, you know, it's interesting because banks, again, as I said, don't want to talk about this. They never want to talk about security issues. They don't want to scare anybody. But I understand there's been a move towards regulating banks, to telling banks, you got to fix this. You got to fix this, whether you want to admit it or not. This is, by now, everybody who really needs to probably has. This is a good time to change those passwords. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
So it's safe to go back to OK Cupid? Here's your answer. Heather, it was never safe.
Oh, hey, if you want to use OK Cupid, you go ahead. Actually, it's the guys who founded OK Cupid have set up a really cool encryption site called keybase.io that allows you to do strong encryption.
Oh.
And they're offering it for free. So I like these guys. And I'm on there now. It's a very alpha. I was able to get an invite to it. They're not really public yet. But eventually, this will be a free directory of private PGP keys, strong encryption keys, so that you will you can safely know somebody is. So the way we could send
email that the NSA doesn't read.
Well, yeah, exactly. The time has come. So if you search for me on it, you'll see. Let's see, there I am. You'll see that I have validated who I am, and they ask you to do this by sending a tweet. Identifying yourself by, so I've used these three methods to say no, this is, and only I could have done this. So I validated it with a tweet, I validated it on GitHub, and I validated it on my website. So that kind of says this is who he is. This is my public key. You can use this to send me private email.
Real EO Laporte.
Real EO. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's back from Las Vegas, Scott Wilkinson, and boy is his pedometer tired. Did you do a pedometer at the National Association of Broadcasters show as well?
You know, when I packed this time, I forgot it.
That's all right. You know it's miles.
It's miles.
Miles of aisles.
Miles of aisles. At CES, I did 25 miles last January.
Wow.
I don't think I did quite that much this year, but it was pretty intense. I was staying at the LVH, which is next door to the convention center, so I did that so that I could walk over to the convention center, so that maybe I did put double-digit miles on my shoes.
The National Association of Broadcasters, actually, they don't like it to be called that. They want to just say the NAB show. It is traditionally a show for broadcast engineers. It's where they go to look at radio transmitters and microphones.
Well, that may be where it started, and that's certainly still there. But the NAB show, I believe the subline, the subtext is, you know, where it's for content creators of all types.
It has really now become, and since so many of us make YouTube videos, make movies, there's a vast and growing audience of amateurs who are making content. So this is a good show for everybody now.
Oh, it really is. Yeah. I mean, GoPro makes a huge presence there with their, I forget the name of the camera, but you know, it's a little camera you mount on your helmet when you go snowboarding and stuff like that. Blackmagic, Canon, JVC, Panasonic, Sony all have relatively inexpensive but broadcast quality cameras.
Yeah.
Camcorders.
It's really a revolution, I think.
It really
it's
is.
It's remarkable.
It really
so what did yeah, you see is. That you first of all, were there TV sets there?
Well,
Not so much.
Not consumer
yeah.
TVs.
More, yeah.
There were professional displays of many sorts. And one of the reasons that I like to go to NAB is that the technology that you see there that professionals use ends up trickling down into the consumer marketplace one way or another. This is sort of the future of consumer displays. For example, Panasonic had a 98-inch 4K or Ultra HD LED TV with full array backlighting with local dimming. This is the best possible technology for LCD TVs. 98 inches diagonal. It's huge and it looked fabulous. Of course, they didn't have any pricing, but you know, they
if
also
you have
had,
to ask you really, you can't afford
you really
it.
Can't really, afford
you
it.
Really can't. You really, really can't afford it. Yeah.
They also had a laser projector, which is coming down the pike. Christie, which is one of the main makers of commercial cinema projectors, digital projectors, also had a laser projector. In fact, they had a laser projector with what they called six primaries. And I asked them, wait a second, I thought there were only three primaries, red, green, and blue. And they said, well, yes, that's true, but they were doing what's called color difference 3D, or what is more commonly called Dolby 3D, which is quite interesting. Basically, you put on the screen a picture for the left eye with one set of red, green, and blue, and then you put on the screen also a picture for the other eye, the right eye, with a slightly different set of red, green, and blue. And then you have to wear glasses still, of course. They filter out those two different sets of red, green, and blue, which are separated in wavelength by 20 nanometers. Which is not very much at all, but in terms of light and lasers, it's fine to separate those two out, and then the glasses filter one set out for that doesn't reach the right eye, and the other filters out that doesn't reach the left eye, and you see a 3D image. Now, it looked fabulous. They did a demo, and it really looked great. probably the best Dolby 3D I've seen. Dolby 3D, though, has a problem, which is internal reflections in the glasses. The glasses are of a certain type that it kind of looks a little cloudy around the periphery. And I asked them about that, and they said, they're still working on that.
Yeah.
So
hey, Dolby, you can stop working on that. Nobody wants
it. Now, what Dolby has worked on that is much, much more exciting, especially for consumers.
Aren't TV manufacturers eliminating 3D in their new TVs?
No, not entirely. Vizio did.
Oh, not entirely. Well, okay.
Well, Vizio is one example of a company that did. They said our 2014 TVs aren't going to do it.
Yeah.
But plenty of TVs still have 3D.
Yeah, yeah. Until next year.
Until maybe next
year. Move on, Dolby. I'm telling you, move on.
You know, and most people in the industry do agree that 3D kind of has come and gone.
Yeah.
It has.
Like it did in the 50s.
Well, at least at home. Now, you go out to the movies, you're still going to see plenty of 3D titles, especially animation, because it's essentially free to do in animation. You've already got the data.
Did you see that Amazon, I think this is a spurious rumor, but it came from the Wall Street Journal. Amazon reportedly is doing a phone with, get ready for this, glasses-free 3D. It's going to have some sort of retina tracking built into the phone.
Oh, I hadn't heard that exactly, but
that's
I do know.
Crazy talk.
I do know that auto stereoscopic 3D, that is 3D without glasses, is much easier to do on a smaller screen.
Yeah. They're calling it a holographic display.
Well, I can't wait to see it.
It's a bogus rumor. I can't believe it.
Yeah, you know.
Amazon's not exactly what I would call a hardware leader.
No,
if you told me
not.
Samsung was doing it, I'd believe it, but not Amazon.
Right.
Come on.
I mean, like I said, they've had 3D small handheld devices, auto stereo, for years.
Yeah.
Small handheld gaming devices and small tablets and phones and stuff. You can do that pretty easily because you can always hold the phone right in the sweet spot. But on a large screen TV, you have to put your head in the right place, and it's kind of a pain in the butt. So,
anything else you saw of interest?
Oh, sure. Like I said, Dolby, one of the most exciting things that I have seen coming down the consumer pike in a long time is Dolby Vision, which is their implementation of something called high dynamic range. Now, content that we see in the home today and TVs that we watch it on have a certain dynamic range, which is the difference between the darkest and the brightest part of the picture. And it's pretty limited, especially compared to what we can see as humans and what's out there in the real world. And so what Dolby has done, what other people are trying to do, is to develop a display with a greater dynamic range, a greater difference between the darkest and brightest parts of the image. And the TVs that I've seen that do that just look stunning. I mean, it's who cares about 4K or UHD? I mean, I couldn't care less when I see a picture like that. If it were available on an HD TV, a regular HD TV we could buy today, I'd get it in a second because you can see the difference from across the room. With 4K on a normal size screen at a normal seating distance that most people use, you can't even see the difference in spatial resolution and the number of pixels because your eye is only so can only resolve so much detail. But this high dynamic range, man, oh man, that looks great. The problem is it needs content that has been prepared, or what's technically called graded, to take advantage of that extra dynamic range. And the news at NAB was that Dolby has made an agreement with some of the companies that facilitate the preparation of content to use Dolby Vision. So this is really, really good news because Vizio announced, for example, they dropped 3D, but they added Dolby Vision. They added this technology, this high dynamic range technology, into their top-of-the-line set called the Reference Series. But if you see that with content graded for it with the extra dynamic range, you just can't believe it. Your jaw drops onto the floor because, in particular, specular highlights, reflections of sun on the plane look fantastic.
Scott Wilkinson, he's the editor-in-chief of the AVS Forum. You can find his entire NAB report at twit.tv/specials. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I want all my movies in doubly.
Doubly. I got to tell you, if you ever get a chance to see Dolby Vision, go see
that
it.
Sounds great. Although HDR is another one like 3D where it can be really pushed too far.
Well, again, if the TV has the capability and the content is graded to that capability.
And the person creating the content did it with a nice light touch.
Yeah.
That's part of the problem.
That's part of the problem. Yeah. I also went around NAB asking about what's the dynamic range of cameras that they're capturing the material with, because that's, you know, the starting point. You shouldn't push beyond what the camera can capture. The new red camera called the Dragon is at 16 stops, f-stops, which is pretty good. I think most digital cameras are in the 14, 15, 16 stop range. Another interesting thing at NAB that I didn't get a chance to mention there was Red had this 6K camera, this camera that captures digital images in a 6K resolution, 6,000 something by 3,000 something. But there's no 6K digital projector. They shot a little movie, a little short subject, and because there's no 6K digital projector, they transferred it to IMAX film. And they played actually an IMAX film from an IMAX projector onto a relatively small screen, because there was no way to project 6K directly. I thought that was very interesting, kind of a step backwards in a way from digital to film. Usually it's the other way around. Webby in the chat room is asking, many OLED TVs? Some OLED professional monitors, yes. TV Logic was one. There were several. They weren't 4K. They were 1080p, but they were OLED, and they looked really, really good. We saw some in the SpectraCal booth because they were calibrating them. It was just a fabulous time was had by all. And the Twit crew that I was working with was great. I didn't actually run into Padre. Padre, I know you were there.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. All right, enough of me. Let's talk to you. Heather Hammon has been gathering callers at 8888 Ask Leo. Heather, who should I begin with?
Didn't fall apart last week.
Well, this Heartbleed thing is just, you know, got a lot of attention, and I guess people, one security expert said on a scale of 1 to 10, this is an 11. It's really bad. You know what's the irony of all this is? We were all prepared to talk about the XP-pocalypse, right?
Exactly.
And I think there's a certain amount of, you know the German phrase Schadenfreude?
Oh, I love that.
There's a little Schadenfreude in up there in Redmond, Washington at Microsoft. Because, of course, instead of the big problem this week being Windows XP, it turns out it's open source software. And I really do, and this is very conspiracy theory, but I think somebody snuck this in, just as they did with the Apple thing, and they snuck it into the code. Although, the Apple one, you can make a pretty strong case that it really helped some, you know, spy agencies, for instance. This one is perhaps not as useful, because all you can do is request a random 64K chunk of memory. That's not very useful. Maybe this was just an accident. Anyway, I said we weren't going to talk anymore about this. Let's go to the phones. Who should I talk to?
Well, let's see if we can help Philip in Rialto, California.
I shall do my best. Thank you, Heather Hammon, Phone Ranger. Hello, Philip. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
And I probably don't have the most technical question in the world, but I want to get your opinion on the fact that I don't know if you've ever heard of an Internet Explorer, the Internet Explorer program simply not reacting. It comes on. It doesn't even give a non-connection page or anything. It just sits there. My wife was on it on a department store website, and all of a sudden it just went away. So I wanted to know, am I forced to reformat the entire hard
drive? No.
All that?
No.
Because I hate doing that.
Yeah, I hate doing that too. No, probably not. The first thing you first of all, what version of Windows?
It's a Windows 7.
Okay.
Operation.
And have you been keeping Explorer up to date? You have 9, 10,
absolutely,
or 11?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, like I say, every Tuesday.
Yeah, good man. I love that. Every second Tuesday, Microsoft gives you the patches. Right. And they don't – usually an update to Internet Explorer is not considered a critical patch. It's just a optional one, but eventually they start to push it on you. It's good. You should be at the current version if possible. That's, I think, 11. There is a way to reset Internet Explorer. That's the first thing I would try to do. It will put Internet Explorer back to the way it was when it was first installed. It is, by the way, this is a one-way street, so you're going to lose any cached information and stuff. But I think that's kind of what you want to do, because that sounds like that's what's going on. So you close Internet Explorer and Windows Explorer. You open Internet Explorer. And then in the Tools button, you go to Internet Options. There's an Advanced tab and a Reset button. It's in the Options under the Advanced tab, Reset. And what that will do is kill browsing history. It'll reset search providers. It'll get rid of any, home pages and tracking. All that stuff will be reset, including all the cache stuff. That's very likely what's causing the problem. But if that doesn't fix it, if something else is broken, then there may be other issues that are deeper.
Right.
And there is a intermediate step between wiping the hard drive and just giving up, and that is to run the Windows installer. I hope you have an install disk or recovery disk. And
yeah, I have a recovery
disk. Yeah. Well, see, recovery disk may not help here. But a Windows install disk, what it will do is, as it goes through the process, it'll suddenly say, wait a minute, you already have Windows on here. Would you like me to repair it? And that's what you want to try, because it may be, things happen on the hard drive, and maybe a critical library is damaged, or some piece of code got a 1 instead of a 0 blasted in there by a cosmic ray. And, all these things can actually cause this exact symptom. So if you don't have it's helpful if you have a Windows disk. You can do it manually using the system file checker. You click Start, Run, and type SFC, System File Checker, /scan now. But what that will do is essentially the same thing as a repair, and it will need a Windows disk, because if it finds missing or damaged files, it will take them from the Windows disk. You can also try updating IE, getting the latest version, downloading it, and reinstalling it. Do you have Chrome or another browser on there?
I don't. I knew you were going to ask me that, too.
Well, you can't... Some people call IE, I'm one of them, a delivery system for Chrome, because
right.
you need to go online to get Chrome. So that's the first and last time I use IE on a Windows machine is to get Chrome. But you can't get rid of IE, and in fact, a lot of things use it. So, you do want to get this fixed. So try fixing that. If you can get it fixed, then you can go to google.com/Chrome. I prefer to surf with Chrome. I think it's safer.
I think I will do that.
Yeah. Yeah, IE is kind of notorious for kind of getting messed up, but I think it's because a lot of people use it, and the more people that use it, the more likely you're going to have problems. Okay. So I would try that. There is a malicious software removal tool. You probably heard me talk about that. It's not an antivirus, but it is on your system. Start Run MRT will allow you to do a thorough scan. If there is, a lot of times what happens, you get what's called a browser hijacker object or a malicious extension, and that's what's crashing IE. So the other thing you can do is start IE in safe mode. Let me make sure I've got how to do this. That will say, don't use any extensions. Don't run any extensions.
Okay.
And that may also solve it. So... unfortunately, it's a command line. You want to start, run, and then say internet iExplore.exe -extoff. That's extensions off, extoff.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a kind of complicated one. But if an extension is blocking it, which it sounds like it may.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the start menu, I think there should be an icon for safe mode. You can make one if you don't have one, but there should be an icon for safe mode.
Okay.
But if you can't, then I'll put this in the show notes. iExplore --extoff. Oops. And that'll do it. One of those things ought to help. I hope it does. Thanks for the call. I hope it. Hope you're,
okay, I appreciate
hope
it, solves Leo. It.
My
Very
pleasure.
Much.
Thanks for listening. John, San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John.
Hey, Leo. Bill. It's a pleasure on this bright, sunny day down here in Southern California. Thanks for taking my call.
I love San Diego. One of my favorite places.
You're welcome anytime.
Thank you.
Just a couple of quick questions. I'm a little confused about USB 3 and how to improve wireless around my house. Number one, the first question with USB 3 is I cannot seem to achieve anywhere near the speeds alluded to with data transfer for USB 3. In fact, I'm getting maybe 10, maybe 15% of the speed presented at USB 3. And then, you know, the in-home Wi-Fi, you know, the router signal is, you know, do I just need to...
Well, that's too. Let me do the USB 3 first, cause, and then we'll get to the router. So USB 3 is the new version of USB. Theoretically capable of 5 gigabits. That's 625 megabytes per second. That's in theory. That's the nominal speed. But it's going to be limited by, for instance, the speed of your device. Are you on a spinning? Are you connecting with a spinning hard drive? What are you connecting via USB 3?
My passport external?
Yeah, that's a spinning hard drive. So that isn't that fast, for one thing. The drive itself is the limitation. You do have to have a USB connector, a USB, you know, that special USB plug to get the maximum speed. We're going to take a break. We'll talk a little more when we come back. Leo LaPointe, the tech guy. Device has to be USB 3, obviously.
Always happy to talk to the chat room.
Eating while you're talking.
Please, have a bite. got a great question. Web2469 asked if it was possible to make a TV so bright that when showing the sun and you looked at it, you'd go blind. And the answer is no. the sun... When you look directly at the sun, that brightness is measured as over a billion nits, billions and billions of nits. No, only 1.6 billion, actually. And TVs these days are a few hundred nits. And Dolby would love to get to have a TV that did 10,000 nits, but there's no way that any TV can do that today and maybe never. They would be lucky if they got to a couple thousand. So the answer is no. It's never going to be exactly like looking directly at the sun, but you wouldn't want it to be, would you? No. As Taylor Kara says, no wonder it's a pain to look at directly. That's exactly right. Your eyes are not designed for that much output, input, I should say. Logan 5 asked what was an acceptable glue for fixing speaker cones. He says, I assume it's not super glue. No, I probably not. I've never tried that before, but as I mentioned in the chat room, there's a place called Speaker City right here in Burbank, California, that specializes in speaker repairs. And I'm sure they would be delighted to help someone do some repairs on their own, especially if they're not in the area. It's been there forever, this place called Speaker City. They sell drivers and crossovers and parts, you know, for DIYers. So I'm sure if you wanted to fix your speakers, they would be able to help. So go to speakercity.com. Web2469 came back with, actually, what if you used that method that reflects pixels using mirrors and the TV used the sun as a light source? You know, that's an interesting idea, because certainly the mirrors would be could be pretty efficient. So you might get a serious amount of light off of that. Now, could you do that with a DL? That would then end up being like a DLP rear projection TV, maybe, or something like that. I'll have to think about that. That's pretty cool. Sloth is asking, I'm not sure about the difference between full array and other backlit LCD TVs. Great question. Backlit really refers to any kind. That's kind of almost a meaningless term. All LCD TVs need a light behind the actual LCD panel, which creates the image that you see. Light needs to pass through that panel and reach your eyes. And what the panel, which each of the little pixels does in the panel, is become more or less opaque, allowing more or less light to pass through it. If it's less opaque, then that pixel is going to be brighter because more light's passing through. And if it's more opaque, then less light's going to go through. It's going to be a darker pixel. So any kind of – all LCDs have to have backlights of one sort or another. Now, there are two basic kinds these days. One is called edge lit, which means the LCDs are around the edge of the screen and they fire inward this way or both. And then there's something called a light guide plate, which is a sort of a filter diffuser light ray bender thing that takes the light coming in and bends it so that it then passes through the LCD panel and onto your eyes. The other type is normally called full array backlighting, which is basically behind the LCD panel, there's an array of LEDs, which then just fire straight through the LCD panel and to your eyes. Now, full array gives you the opportunity anyway to do something called local dimming, which is if you have a scene and some parts of the scene are bright and some parts are dark, you can dim the LEDs behind the dark part and brighten the LEDs behind the bright part, and you get an increased contrast, and the picture really pops. It looks really good. That's mostly high-end sets. Low-end sets, some of them have full-array backlighting, but they don't implement local dimming because there aren't enough LCDs behind the there aren't enough LEDs situated behind the LCD in order to make local dimming effective. So that's often has a different name called direct backlighting. So when you see the term direct backlighting, say on the Vizio E series, the 2013 anyway, Vizio E series, or the Samsung EH5000 or F5000 series, it'll say direct backlighting. It means there's an array of LEDs behind the LCD screen, but they don't do local dimming. The term full array is mostly intended to be used with sets that do local dimming. And so sometimes those sets are called full array local dimming, or FALD. So hopefully that gave you some indication of that. Mick says, sure, you could get all the vitamin D off your TV. Well, the spectrum would probably be different, so it might not activate that vitamin D producing part of your body, but it's pretty interesting. Web6684, my video is super sharp today. Glad to hear it. System's working pretty good. Jay asks, is that the place to repair RSL speakers? Speaker City? My foam is gone. I don't think they're brand specific. They'll work on anything as far as I know. Anyway, so Sloth, that was the answer to that question. Thank you very much. Might also explain the slightly darker areas of cheaper TVs. Possibly, but certainly edge lit. One of the problems with edge lit LCD TVs is screen uniformity. So some areas, especially in dark scenes like outer space scenes, Star Wars, whatever, you will see some areas of the screen being slightly lighter and other areas of the screen being slightly darker. That's because this light guide plate is not perfect. And so some areas get a little more light than others, and it's more evident in dark scenes, which is why I prefer either direct illumination or full array local dimming. Both of them will give you better illumination than edge lighting. Web 7050, how does edge lit local dimming work? A lot of companies claim they have local dimming with edge lit TVs, and I don't buy it. They claim it. They don't say actually local dimming. They say Samsung calls it micro dimming. And it only works in big, big zones. It really doesn't work. It doesn't do the same thing as local dimming. I think we're about to start. Maybe not quite. Beatmaster asks, any news on 4K media player and streamers price-wise? No, I don't. The Red player is out. It's about $1,500, $1,700. Yep, here we go.
Thanks, Scott.
My pleasure. See ya.
See ya. Huntress. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, hour number two of the Tech Guy program. Phone number 8888-ASK-LEO. I should mention the website, too, because anytime I mention a link or give you a command line that you can use, it'll all be at the show notes at techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. This is episode 1073 in a continuing saga trying to solve the world's computer issues. So John in San Diego had a little problem. He says, my USB 3 isn't fast as it ought to be. Supposedly 5 gigabits, 625 megabytes per second. But first of all, make sure that passport is a USB 3 passport, the hard drive, is it?
Absolutely.
Okay. So that at least has the capability. And then you need a USB 3 port. Obviously, it has to be USB 3 from start to finish. And the USB 3 is downward compatible as USB 2 was. So you can use older cables and older drives and it'll all work. But if you want the full speed, you need to use all USB 3 stuff, including that USB 3 cable. It has a blue connector.
Right.
One end looks normal. The other end looks a little odd. But if you have all of that, it may just simply be the passport itself isn't that fast.
Well, you know, I try to take all that into consideration and doing the math and the whole thing. And all the whiz kids and gurus and everybody leading up to you, you know, they're like, hey, you got a home system, you know, an i7, you know, you're running 8 gig and all blah, 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 blah. And
none of that's germane, by the way. Nice of them to say that, but none of that has anything to do with it. It's merely, do you have a USB 3 port on both sides and a USB 3 cable? You could be using an i5. The throughput on the I/O bus is what matters. And, you know, I don't know why it's not as fast, except that it's probably the passport. I use USB 3 with very, very fast SSD drives, and I get much faster. But you're never going to get 5 gigabits. You're never going
to
get 6 gigabits.
I'm not prepared for that. I just wasn't prepared for 5 to 10% performance rather than a... You know, I'd probably take, you know, 50%, you know, maybe 2.5 gigabits or maybe even 2 would be exciting.
Well,
but I'm,
what you should do is figure out what the throughput is of that passport drive. It's probably, is it bus powered? It's not plugged into the wall, right?
That is correct. This drive is not plugged into the...
If bus powered drives tend to be the 5,400 RPM slower drives because they don't need as much power.
Right.
So, and it could be there's something wrong, you know, the motherboard or something, but,
all right.
Yeah, I'm not sure, you know, what's going on. You should probably get more than you're getting. You should probably get at least 20%, but don't expect 625 megabytes a second.
I'm getting 20, maybe 30.
Yeah, 20's not very fast.
It might spike at 40 once in a while. But anyway, okay, so that's good to know. I can go to a different power and maybe change the drive and do that.
I would see, you know, I mean, what I use is SSD drives because they're very fast. And they will saturate. They'll actually go faster than USB 3 is capable. So I'll see, you know, as much as I, you know, 500 megabytes per second easily.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
There's a great, you know, it's also a good idea. Are you on Mac or PC?
I'm a PC guy for now.
They're good drive throughput monitors that you can see exactly what you're getting. It's kind of hard to tell just by looking at it.
Okay.
It does seem like you're getting USB 2 speed, not USB 3 speed, but I'm not sure why. I would download a drive speed tester. I'm not sure what people use on Windows. I'll have to check. My guess is, and the port you're using, is it blue? The one on your machine?
Yeah, no, it's definitely. Yeah.
And who made the machine?
My desktop is a Lenovo.
It's a Lenovo. All right. Well, they will have wired it properly, and if they say USB 3, then it should be USB 3.
Okay. I guess more importantly, and I appreciate your time. I'm just
Tori in the chat room has a passport. He says I get much faster throughput than that. So yeah, there is something wrong. I'm not sure what.
Okay, and maybe you could coach me on in-home router Wi-Fi speeds.
You're a frustrated guy. Everything's running slow. You're a man in a hurry, and your stupid computer stuff is too slow. So are you using 802.11n? What are you using?
You know, it's a small little Netgear because I'm living in a small little house, and so I'm not using the
Netgear's fine.
700s or any of that stuff. And
Netgear's fine. What protocol does it use?
I'm sure it's 802.11. Yeah.
Well, all of it is. Is it A, B, G, N, or A, C? Those are the four choices.
I think it's probably. I think it's. It might even be a G.
Yeah. So N is faster. N's newer and faster, and frankly, N is being supplanted now by AC. So many of the new routers are starting to use AC, even though that has not yet been ratified. It's still a draft standard. But A, B, and G are older. N is the fast, okay. Is faster than that. So a new router could give you better speed. You know, as much as I said that you, when we talk about USB, we talk about the difference between real speed and nominal speed. That's in spades on Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi, you rarely get more than half the nominal speed. So on 802.11b, which was nominally 10 megabits, if you got 5 megabits, you were lucky. And if it's farther away, it gets slower. And if there's interference, it gets slower. And that's another big problem. When we're talking radio frequency, it's a black art. You know, I mean, where it's positioned, can you see other people's Wi-Fis in your house?
If I do, yeah, network checking networks, yeah, I can see other networks
like
in the area.
Like how many? Like 4, 5, 100?
Yeah, 4, 5, or 100. No,
a lot, right? Yeah, that's the problem right now. We're all using the same 2.4 gigahertz spectrum, but and there are really only effectively 3 channels on that spectrum. And so if you get a Wi-Fi checker, you can see which channels are busy. But I bet you if there's a bunch of people, it's just congestion. It's like LAX at noon on Thanksgiving Day. It's crazy. And that's going to slow you down, too. So that's where going to a dual band 802.11n or even AC router can help you because you can put some stuff at 5 gigs. I only use 5 gigahertz in my house, and we live in the country. We don't have interference from anything except my Sonos, which is at 2.4, and that's enough to slow it down. So if you're in a busy neck of the woods where there's a lot of other people, and anybody lives in an apartment, you're going to see, you know, literally maybe a dozen or two dozen other Wi-Fi access points. That congestion is killing your throughput. So getting off of 2.4 gigahertz, going to 5, that helps until everybody else does it. AC, the newest one, has some additional features to improve throughput, like something called beamforming. It actually aims at your device. Now, you have to get a pretty fancy AC router to do that, and most of them don't yet. There are a lot of different ways to solve this, but because Wi-Fi is now ubiquitous, it's so popular. And that is unregulated spectrum, the 2.4 gigahertz band. I mean, there's baby monitors, there's microwaves, there's cordless phones. Sonos uses it. Everybody uses it. It's crazy out there. So I think looking at a dual band router will help. But what I would probably start with is get a Wi-Fi analyzer. There are a number of them out for free. And just taking a look at the spectrum, you'll be amazed. There's a good. I'm trying to remember the name of the good one for Windows. Anybody in the chat room, what's the best Wi-Fi analyzer on Windows? There was a really good one we used to play with, and it would tell you so much stuff. XIRRUS, NetStumbler. That's the one. I like NetStumbler. Insider, that's another one. Dan, our chat mod, says INSSIDER, Insider, is a really good analyzer. What you'll see is a map of overlapping frequencies, and you'll see how bad it is. This is from MetaGeek, MetaGeek.net. Insider, excellent product. Highly recommend it. See what's going on in your network, and then maybe it's time to get a newer router. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Barnaby Dable Doo. Johnny Jett, our travel guru, coming up in 10 minutes. Wonder where he'll be. Last I saw, first he was in Paris with his wife. Romantic, huh? And then I think they went to London. I don't know. We'll find out where in the world is Johnny Jett? We'll find out in a little bit. Brad is on the line from Victorville, California. Hi, Brad. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo.
Brad.
Hey, man. What's this I'm hearing? I mean, you got me terrified.
Uh-oh. The heart bleed?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Don't panic. It's going to be okay.
Anyway, I'm on my second MacBook Pro, and this year I'm changing cameras to a GH4. I'll be shooting in 4K, but I'm going to be down converting to 1080p.
Yeah.
For now.
Yeah.
But I was looking at getting the Mac Pro next year.
Yeah.
And so I can eventually be headed up and running with that.
Sure. The Mac Pro, which is that beautiful black cylinder.
Yeah.
That is high. It's almost like a swollen coffee can. It's not that big. It's tiny.
It's not very big.
But it's designed to handle 4K ultra high def video, and you need a lot of horsepower to push that many pixels.
Yeah. That's why I'm looking at next year.
Yeah.
Worry, though, you know, every year Apple makes a change, and every year I hear the naysayers, and I used to stress about it, but I quit doing it because usually Apple was on the cutting edge. They were on the cusp.
I think the Mac Pro is an amazing machine. It won't be cheap. Remember, the last Mac Pro wasn't updated for 3 years. I wouldn't worry about it getting updated too fast.
Well, that's not it. What's worrying me is this. 2 weeks ago, you were real disappointed with your Mac Pro.
Yeah.
When you say something, it's
well,
like...
Well, remember, I got... And I have to, unfortunately, in order to review stuff, I've got to get it in a timely fashion. So I got one of the very earliest Mac Pros. And our general recommendation is don't buy any computer in, you know, the first few months, because there are always little issues. In fact, I've been told now that they know of an issue with these early ones, and they're going to fix it. But I think it will be fixed by the time you buy. In fact, I think probably if you could buy one, it would be fixed by now. It's still, you know, very hard to get. I think they're still 6 weeks out or something like that. So
yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't. You don't ever want to get, especially for a heavy duty production machine, the first of anything.
Yeah.
Apple or anybody. You want to let them put it out on the assembly line for a little while before they'll work out all the kinks.
And I was worried because I really don't want to go PC only because. I'm sure they're great now, but, you know, I made the transition from Amigas over to Apple.
Right.
And
If you can wait, and it sounds like you're planning on waiting, I think you'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm planning on waiting.
Yeah, and stay tuned. You know, I'll keep you posted. Apparently, the sudden reboot problems I've been having with the Mac Pro are not unknown to Apple.
Okay.
And it sounds like they had a manufacturer issue. So
well, it almost sounded, I mean, I was a little worried that they were kind of trying to abandon the platform.
No, the good news is they did update the Mac Pro. I mean, this is a really amazing machine, especially for the money.
But
I know it sounds expensive. It's more than $3,000 just for the CPU at the base. However, you get dual high-end graphics cards.
Exactly.
You're getting a processor that by itself is almost $2,000.
Yeah.
So, of course, it's an expensive machine, but and most people don't need it. But if you're doing 4K video, you need it, and I would wait a little bit. You'll hear people will be talking about it. The problem is there's so few of them in the wild right now that if there is a problem that you wouldn't know about it because just too few people have them. As they get and it's also remember it's not just the first machine; it's the first thing they've made in this new factory. This is all new workers, new assembly line, new factory, new parts. Everything's new. So, of course, there are going to be some little kinks to work out. I wouldn't be surprised. In fact, I knew when I bought it, because I bought it, you know, immediately. I knew that I was potentially buying trouble. I have had many, many Macs since 1984. And
yeah.
This is the first time I've ever had one that had continuing problems. Ever.
Yeah, I've never had a problem with mine, which is why I stay with that ecosystem.
Yeah.
But I wanted to kind of beg to differ with you. You were talking about the Mac Pro and how it's kind of a limited thing because of its price. It is. But I think Apple's looking ahead. But I think, you know, in another 3 years, they're going to be shooting 4K on cell phones.
They are. A few years. They're doing it now.
4K
on cell phones. Now, a cell phone 4K, I don't know how good the quality is, but it is that many pixels. So absolutely. Which phones are there? I think the Sony Xperia Z1S will do it. The Samsung S5 will do it. There are a number of smartphones now that will shoot 4K video.
Oh, my God.
The Z2, not the Z1. The Z2 does it. Yep.
Just when I think I'm on top of it.
A smartphone.
Unbelievable.
A smartphone shooting ultra high def. That's unbelievable. But I got to tell you, you don't need a Mac Pro to handle that video. That's highly compressed.
They're doing straight cuts now with the new MacBook Pros.
Right. But if you shoot with red, if you shoot with a red and you're shooting 4 or 5K video, yeah, I think you probably do want to get a Mac Pro. Yeah. You'll enjoy it. It's a beautiful machine. I love it. It never gets hot. It is quiet. In fact, it's so quiet. This beautiful high-end machine is so quiet that I have a spinning hard drive on my desktop, and it's the noisiest thing in my office. You know, it's just it's an old FireWire drive that I'm still using for backup. I'm going to get rid of it to go all solid state. Because it's literally silent. You hear nothing. It is a fabulous machine. I wouldn't be the first on my block to run out and get one. Wait a little bit. Let's let people like me take the arrows in our backs. And then, once we've cleared the area, you can go in. Apple's been really helpful. Trying to diagnose it. It's one of those issues that it's just very intermittent. It's been operating fine for two. You know, as soon as I talked to the Apple guy and he said, yeah, we know there's a problem, then it hasn't had a problem since. Didn't that happen to you? I know it happens to people with me. They'll say, Leo, there's a terrible problem. I'll go in and I'll say, no, it's working fine. It was happening a minute ago. So apparently they are going to perhaps upgrade a little bit the Mac Pro. I think you could put faster memory in it. Maybe there will be. It is not a fourth generation chip. It's not a Haswell based chip. It's the Xeon. So there's things that they could do probably to improve it. Get it next year if you can wait. Get it next year. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. The phone ranger Heather Hammond is waiting for your call. More of your calls coming up in just a little bit. TechGuyLabs.com is the website. But just a bit, we're going to get Johnny Jett on the horn, find out where he is, talk about getting better deals in travel by using technology. How about that? And yes, incidentally, I did explain at the beginning of the hour, last hour, how to avoid getting bit by heartbleed. My takeaway, and I'll repeat this a few times during the show today, because I know, unfortunately, some people do not listen to every minute of the show. Really? Come on. But my takeaway is don't panic. Chances are everything's fine. It would just be a great time to go out, get LastPass, and update passwords on critical sites. That's always a good thing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Who are those people? I want names. Well, I think what we're trying to figure out, you know, the model that we started with, the idea of that we would make a show, you would download, you know, you would sync, you would subscribe in iTunes and download it, then sync your thing up. That nobody does that, right? And it was always hard, and now it's ridiculous. And I think that I maybe misjudged a little bit, because I thought, well, the way to make it easy is to do a lot of live stuff, and then they just join us. But people still want to watch individual shows. So I think we're now going to have to bite the bullet probably and do our own apps, because that seems to be what everybody's doing. Is if you had a Twit app on your, you know, whatever device, your phone, your tablet, your computer, whatever, that would be the easiest. Then we'd have a list of all the shows. You could go back, listen to any show. You could, if you wanted to, you know, listen to all of them, you could. You could watch live. You could listen live. Yeah.
What we've been mainly doing is when we're in the car, Larry has the app on the phone, so we listen to it.
Yeah, and we have these great third-party apps. I mean, these guys have done a great job.
What's faster, using the Direct Twit app?
It's the same. Should be the same. And you can use TuneIn, or there's lots of ways you can listen. And I think they're, you know, the latency issue should go away, because once you use those apps to make the connection, it's the same thing. Uh-huh. You're getting the same stream. So there shouldn't be, I don't think, any latency issues.
But since we have a data cap on our cell phone, TuneIn,
audio.
This
is the same stream. So it's just, yeah, audio is as small as you're going to get. Uh-huh. It's pretty small. It's 56K, I think. It's pretty small. Look at, it's Johnny Jett. I think he's in some palace. Are you staying at Buckingham Palace today?
You know what? It's pretty close to it.
Yeah. Are you? You must it's be ridiculous. In London. Londinium.
I'm in Lake Como, Italy.
Oh, that's right.
Bellagio.
That's right. You're staying at the Bellagio.
I'm in the Grand Hotel.
And Lago di Como.
You got to see this ceiling if
I'm
you can
so
see it.
I'm so jealous. Oh,
let me
my
just, let
God.
Let me just go to the ceiling.
Do you have to wear a tie when you go to bed in a hotel that nice?
Look at the ceiling. I never had a ceiling that high before.
Or that beautiful. Look how ornate it is.
It's 25 feet.
Sistine Chapel.
He's living in the Sistine Chapel.
It's ridiculous. And I just had dinner at a Michelin star restaurant, which is why I'm in a tie. Life is good.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
I stayed some years ago at Lago di Garda. The Lake District of Italy is gorgeous. Just gorgeous.
I just cruised by George Clooney's home.
Oh, that's right.
Sir
he lives
Richard
over
Branson's,
there. Yeah,
his villa. Just this beautiful. Is not that nice, actually. Sir Richard's is a lot nicer.
Yeah, he got a little more money, probably.
I don't know.
Maybe no, George actually. Is a humble fellow.
He is. He's in a quiet town, and I've only heard good things.
He's
I've
a
only
humble,
heard good
humble
things
fellow.
About him.
I like George Clooney. His mom was an old friend. I like his mom.
That's nice. Well, next time you come to Bellagio, you got to come check out this Grand Hotel Villa Cerbellini.
So jealous.
It's good living here.
So jealous.
How's the Wi-Fi?
It's good. Of course it's good.
Okay, good.
You're at the Villa Cerbellini with 12-foot ceilings. You're going to have good Wi-Fi.
12, 25-foot. Come on.
People are going to be protesting Johnny Jett. It's your fault the rents are going up in Bellagio. Yeah. Johnny Jett is here from johnnyjett.com. He's our travel guru, helps us get better travel deals and enjoy our travel more using technology. He's enjoying travel more right now. Where are you? Are you in the Vatican? What is that? It's gorgeous.
You know, it feels like it. I'm in the Grand Hotel Villa Cerbellini in Bellagio, Italy on Lake Como.
Oh, the Italian Lake District is gorgeous. So you're up there. That's where, isn't that where George Clooney lives up there?
George Clooney, Sir Richard Branson. I mean,
it's a good neighborhood. It's a good neighborhood.
It's not too shabby.
How fun.
My God, it's a good time of year to come because all the hotels just opened up.
Oh, yeah, it's early in the
ready
season.
For summer.
Yeah, is the weather nice?
You know what? Yesterday was 70. Today was a little chilly. And unfortunately, I have to leave tomorrow.
Oh, man, you have a good life. You just came from Paris. Travel's been good to very, very good to Johnny Jett.
It's been very good to, and I used to be afraid to fly, got over my fear, and I truly believe that, you know, if more people get out and see the world, it'll be a better place. There won't be any prejudices.
I agree.
So that's what I try and promote, is just get people out, see the world, and you can do it cheaply. You don't have to stay in these incredible hotels like this one, the Grand Hotel Villa Cerbellini.
No, you're sacrificing for us. I understand.
Yes.
Normally, you'd be at a little pensione down the street. I understand.
If I was paying, believe me, my first night I was in a little apartment, you know, you can rent apartments. And actually that brings up one of my sites. You know, we talked about Airbnb before, but this week they were really in the news for San Francisco. So you have to be careful when you rent from Airbnb, especially in cities like San Francisco, and make sure that you're not going to be vulnerable. So
what
make
happened?
Sure you read all
Wait a minute. What happened? I didn't hear.
Oh, well, they're cracking down on people who are renting these homes. So unless you rent it for 30 days or more, it's illegal in a lot of cities, including San Francisco.
Yeah, they want hotel tax.
Exactly.
You're not a hotel. So, what are you doing?
But you need to protect yourself because let's say you do rent, you know, a home and all of a sudden, you know, the cops come in or whoever they bring in.
Right.
Or before you stay, you know, they could shut you down. So you need to have a backup. And now Airbnb is really, you know, making sure that people know all the rules and laws.
You can get great places. I know people who rented beautiful apartments in Paris via Airbnb for nothing. You know, a lot less than you'd pay for a hotel.
For sure. Yeah. I went to London during the Olympics, and I got one for $300 a night. It was a one-bedroom, beautiful place.
Do you use the app or do you use a website?
I was using the website. I use the website. I had the app, but
Airbnb. The letter B, the letter N, the letter B. .com. Really good. Yeah, I just did my first Airbnb. I haven't stayed there yet. In Napa, there's a music festival coming up, and all the hotel rooms were booked. And I thought, well, maybe let me check Airbnb. And yeah, I got a great apartment. It's like 2 blocks from the festival. It's going to be great.
And when people say, you know, they don't have enough money to travel, with sites like Airbnb, there's also a site called couchsurfing.com, which we've mentioned before. You know, even on Airbnb, you can rent someone's couch for $15 a night. I saw that during the Olympics, or even less. On couchsurfing.com, you can do it for free.
Here's a indoor hut within somebody's house in Germany for $90. They have a little log cabin in their house.
That is cool.
That is weird, but $90, and you get your privacy. You get your privacy.
Hey.
Garden apartment in Amsterdam, $188. This is pretty cool.
You know, most people, when they travel, they're not spending time in the hotel. They're just, you know, they're putting their head there at night.
Right.
So, you know, if you want to see the world, you can do it for cheap.
What else you got?
All right. So, you know, this week, by the way, did you see Airbus came out with the A350, or they just brought out 2 test flights in Hamburg, and the Airbus's A350 is their answer to Boeing 787, the Dreamliner. And what's cool about this plane is that they're going to have near vertical walls and larger overhead baggage compartments. But what I also like is that, you know, a lot of these planes, when you sit down in the seats, you can't put your bag there or even your feet because they have the in-flight entertainment boxes blocking the space.
Really
annoys
me. Yeah.
But this plane actually has all the IFE boxes underneath the floor.
They should just get rid of that and give me an iPad and I'll be happy.
Well, they should, and that is the future. But and also what's cool about this new plane is it has a full cabin LED lighting that can have a mind-boggling 16.7 million possible colors. I didn't even know there was that many possible colors, period. But the first plane is coming out later this year, and Qatar Airways out of Doha is going to be doing it.
Wow.
So that is going to be pretty cool. And by the way, since I was in France last week, did you see what made the news? That they're now, some of these unions are now banning emails, work emails, after 6 p.m.?
That's a kind of a, yeah, that's, I read the real story. It's kind
of... Well, Germany's actually... Some of the big organizations like BMW, I think, in Germany started it.
Yeah.
But I... You know, this could be a trend. You know, banning emails, work emails, especially in France. You know, these guys, they love to live life large.
I'm busy. I'm eating dinner. Do not send me an email.
And then one big thing that came out, it was actually a week and a half ago, I got cut off when I was about to mention it. But the W Hotels... They came out with a social media concierge. Have you heard this?
No. That's just what I need.
$3,000. For $3,000, the W Hotels in New York, you can hire to live tweet or Instagram your wedding. Is that the crazy thing you heard?
Please don't. Don't do it.
people are booking them. It's crazy stuff.
Social media wedding concierge. Wow.
I know. Hey.
What a world.
Future. Yep. And then I saw some on the chat room last week. Someone asked me about some LAX luggage theft tips because some luggage handlers at LAX were stealing bags.
Oh, dear.
Stealing stuff out of bags.
Yeah, what do you do?
Because
if you're going to put a lock on, you have to put a TSA approved lock. Otherwise, they'll break it off, right?
Well, number one, you know, you know, if you can't check a bag, the best thing is not to check a bag.
Yeah, take it with you.
But
yeah.
but even if you check a bag, by the way, the new crime now is people taking stuff from carry-ons. So they wait till you fall asleep, and they go up and just grab your stuff.
So
what I do is I turn my bag inside. You know, I put the zippers towards the back.
Never go to sleep. Keep one eye open at all times.
Or you can put a lock on your bag on the carry-on, but also. Yeah. The bags that you check, you should lock. And you can also do that wrap system, you know. You can even buy it at the airport, especially in Europe, for $10 usually. You can wrap a bag.
They put it in plastic wrap. It's the strangest thing I've ever seen.
It is, but it protects them from the thieves, and that's why they do it.
Right. I've never had anything stolen at an airport or anything. Is that really becoming a thing now?
I mean, it's always. I've had stuff stolen out of Hawaii, actually. I bought all these kind of like macadamia nuts to bring home, and I opened it up. They were gone.
Somebody was hungry. Maybe there was a hamster on the flight. You don't know.
If you're traveling domestically, think about shipping your bags ahead of time using ground, either FedEx or UPS, and just do it ground. And can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I hear you great. I'm sorry.
Okay. That's okay. You can ship it ahead of time using FedEx ground or UPS or even the mail service. Just do it a week in advance. But if you're going to send it to a hotel, make sure the hotel does not charge for deliveries, because some of them do, which is a ripoff.
They charge you to get a delivery?
Yeah, some of them. And they do it by the pound. So if you're going to send a bag.
Everybody's double dipping. What happened to this world? Everybody's greedy.
They're looking at ways to make money. And
everybody.
So now you got to go around it. So ship it to a friend's house if you can.
That's good.
And that's one of the ways to do it.
Follow Johnny Jett on the Twitter. He's at Johnny Jett. Follow him at johnnyjett.com. And follow him to Lago di Como, Italy. And enjoy a beautiful dinner. Where did you go eat tonight?
Mistral, it's called. Mistral, Mistral.
A Michelin one star?
Yeah, it's Michelin one star.
I'm so jealous. Was it good? You get his pictures on Instagram. He's been sending pictures. He's making me hungry. Stop it. Leo Laporte, tech guy. Thank you, Johnny.
Buonanotte.
Buonanotte. That's great. Thanks, John. Have a wonderful time. Is Natalie with you?
Yeah, she's here. She's in the other room packing up.
She married the right guy, I'll tell you. Holy cow.
Oh, I married the right girl.
Holy cow. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Judy's next in Seal Beach, California. Hi, Judy.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
I have a DVR question. I am staying with friends temporarily for like the next 6 months. They already have cable set up with their own DVR, and it's cable. It's a good deal.
Good.
And I have my own room with my own set-top box that's not accessible to their DVR. So what I'm wanting to know...
You didn't bring the set-top box with you. It's in the room.
Yes, it's part of their system already.
Okay, good. All right.
It's not their DVR.
You can't just bring your own set-top box. Okay, got it. Okay.
Correct.
Yeah.
So my question is it possible that I could buy my own DVR and use it in my own room that does not affect or change any of their setup? I don't want to interfere with what they already have. I'm lucky they're letting me stay there.
Yeah, you could get a TiVo or a Channel Master, but it's a little tricky because normally what you do is what I've done with my TiVo, which is you go to the cable company, they give you a cable card, and it turns the TiVo into an official set-top box. If you don't do that, then you have to connect the TiVo up to their set-top box and then use something like an IR blaster. That's what that, and you can get one with an IR blaster. That what it does is it hangs over. It's really kludgy. It hangs over the set-top box, and then when you change a channel on the TiVo, it sends a infrared signal to the set-top box. It's like a dual remote control kind of. And so the TiVo is able to, because what the TiVo has to do is say to the set-top box, hey, at 9 o'clock, we really want to see the last detail. So can you change to channel 42? And it has to do all that, right? So the TiVo literally has to be able to send a signal to the set-top box saying channel 42.
Right, so they can communicate.
So it communicates, yeah. So either an infrared, an IR blaster, some set-top boxes have a link cable that can go to a TiVo that a TiVo can understand. So, yes, it is doable, but it's kind of kludgy. It'd be better if you could tell your friends, hey, would you mind if just for the period of my visit, if I paid you to get a DVR in my room, too?
Okay, I was thinking that might be the better way.
It's by far the
independent.
Yeah, no, I understand, of course, and it's nice of them to let you stay there, and you don't want to impose. But if you pay for, and it's like $4 a month, $5 a month, what they do is they take the regular set-top box and they replace it with a set-top box that has recording capability.
Okay, and that wouldn't interfere with their DVR.
Not in any way. No. Yeah, it's completely separate. It just costs them a little bit to rent it. And if you go to them, I'll go down to the cable store, I'll trade it in, I'll pay for it, here's $100 or whatever. That's the easiest, and it's cheaper than buying a TiVo, by the way.
Okay, well, then that's the plan.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's
okay.
What I needed to know.
Thanks, Judy.
So
have a great stay. Ralph in Claremont, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How you doing? Just wanted to call and let you know about this project I'm on. First, I'm a 3D artist from Disney, and specifically, I make the characters for their themed attractions.
What? Wait a minute. Slow down. Hold on, boy. You can't say that and just go on.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. What do you mean make the characters? You, like, carve them out of wood?
Well, almost. Almost. I use 3D technology to make the characters.
You print them. So, you print them.
No. We carve them out of 8-foot blocks of foam. Using a 6-axis drill.
So is it robot-controlled, the drill?
Exactly.
So you enter into the computer, into the computer-aided design program. You create the 3D model of Mickey or whoever.
Correct.
And then
you put
a square block of foam on a table.
Exactly, on a turntable, and this big robotic arm that's about the size of a M50 machine gun. Carves it, picks up the bit, you know, the different sizes of bits, and it rotates the foam, and it goes all around on like 6 different axes. And before you know it, in about 3 hours, you have Mickey carved out.
Wait, have you posted a time lapse of this on the internet?
You know what? I do have some film, but Disney doesn't let me share it.
No, of course not. You're not. What you've just told me, it was putting your life at risk.
No, not really, because the machine that I use is actually the guy who does the Chuck E. Cheese characters in San Bernardino does all the animatronics and the robotics.
I just pray that the guy who does the Chuck E. Cheese characters gets paid less than you do. That's all I say.
You know, actually.
He gets more.
But that's why I'm calling you. I want to tell you about this project that I'm on.
Okay.
So I'm using CT scanning and laser 3D scanning and also 3D printing to create scientifically accurate miniature dinosaur skulls.
Oh, cool!
Then I'm casting them in precious metal like silver, bronze, gold, and it's starting to really take off. And I kind of wanted to tell you about.
Do you sell this as jewelry or like just as an objet d'art?
Well, I'm just trying to start out. If you would like to see some of these models,
what's the website? Give me the website.
Well, I'm on Kickstarter, and if you search dinosaur skulls, it'll come right up.
So you're trying to get people to donate money to set you up in this dinosaur skull business.
Yeah, and I'm making metal dinosaur skulls up to about the size of grapefruits.
I want one. I'm going right now. Let's see, you're trying to get 8,000. You've got 6,000 so far.
And I got 15 days to go. But if you just scroll a little bit of the way down,
you'll
see where it says my current specimens and designs.
Yeah.
If you click on any of those dinosaurs there, it'll pull up the 3D model.
I want a Triceratops in my house. Why don't you do the whole... Look at that. Now, where do you get the models for these? Are they online?
I make them. I'm the artist.
Yeah, but, I mean, they're scientifically accurate, right?
Yes. I work with a paleontologist and a doctor, an emergency room doctor in New York.
What does he know about dinosaurs?
Well, no. He's a fossil collector, and he uses the CT machine in his office.
Oh, of course. He has the CAT scanner so he can make this stuff.
Yes. So he gives me the files.
Wow.
And then I clean them up. You know, I make them look nice and pretty.
Can you make one of my skull?
Actually, I do have a human skull.
Okay, yeah. After I'm gone. Not before, but after I'm gone, I'm going to have him send you my head. And it'd be a lovely
Leo.
Memorial.
Leo, I have a portable scanner. I can just go to your office and get in your head. And it's totally safe. It's lasers.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
Actually, one of the scanners we use is one that you actually featured on your show, the one by NextInge. But that's our baby scanner.
This is really neat. What a good idea. So this is a completely shameless plug, right?
You know what? It's a little bit of a plug, but I knew you would like it because who doesn't love dinosaurs?
Who doesn't love them?
And you
can't say it on the Kickstarter site, but it's the same technology used to design a Mickey Mouse skull.
Exactly. You know, I've been doing this for. And if you've been,
how did you get into this business? Did you study this in high school?
Well, I'm an art center graduate.
Okay.
And I just started doing, going with animation, but then I started working with CNC machines and negative.
Interesting business.
It's a lot of fun.
But you know what? DreamWorks is pulling out of California. I've done some freelance for them. They're opening up a 1.6 million artist facility in Shanghai. So
yeah, of course. It'll be cheaper there. Yeah.
So, you know, and I'm not getting any younger, and I figured, you know, hey,
this is a good business.
Have no IP.
You can't go, but it wouldn't just. Yeah, that's right. Nobody owns the dinosaur head.
But no one's making these. Like I said, they're scientifically accurate. They're made from real fossils.
So I'll put a link on the show notes, or you can go to Kickstarter.com and search for metal dinosaur skull miniatures. You know, we have a giant gear in our studio that is the, you know, our logo, and it's it's probably about four or 5 feet, and it was made with a laser cutter out of foam. That's how they do it, and then they paint it with paint that looks like rust. I think it has rust in the paint. It looks just like a big old rusty gear. But if it were the real thing, it'd probably weigh a ton.
Yeah, no, I did that for Oakley. I did a similar project like that for Oakley.
It cost us. It was not cheap. I think it was $5,000 to get that thing made. That's actually
a pretty good deal because now they're probably running out.
We shopped around.
Oh, I'm sure you did.
We shopped. Hey, how much for the gear? We shopped around. Well, it's an interesting business. I wish you luck. And sounds like a neat idea. And this is an example of where Kickstarter is a fascinating thing because. It's not a and I think that this is, you got to understand, it's not a marketplace. You're not, and that's where it's a little bit, this looks like you're buying a skull. You kind of are and you're kind of not. That's the only, the only qualm I have about Kickstarter. He promises you as a reward for investment, but it's not guaranteed. Yeah, I think he is because he's making them. But that's the only caveat. And they talk about it at the bottom of every page. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about, computers, the internet, home theater, creating Mickey Mouse out of foam core, any of that stuff. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you wish to join us in the chat room or you want to see links to some of the things I've mentioned or just catch up on previous episodes. It's all on the website, and that would be techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. Moving on from Ralph, let's see. Marie in Whittier, California. Hi, Marie. Leo Laporte here.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. I love listening to you in the morning.
Thank you.
Well, the reason I'm calling is... the other day, I was on the computer, and when I went to go put it on, I got the FBI on there.
Yeah. You know that that's not the FBI, right?
I didn't know that at the time. But I'll tell you
did you jump? You must have jumped.
I did. God, I was yelling at my husband, and he's a
it's funny because it says, you know, there are various things. This it's a virus, by the way. Various things, or malware, maybe not a virus. The various things this FBI virus says, but usually it says something like, "This is the FBI. We notice that you've been accessing child pornography, and we want you to go to 7-Eleven and get $300 in money pack coupons and send them to us." Which is funny because I don't think that's how the FBI works. I seriously don't think that if you get busted by the FBI that you can go to 7-Eleven and get coupons and get off the hook. So that should be a little bit of a giveaway. What is hackers.
About money, though.
Huh?
It didn't say anything about money. It just, what it did is that it froze my computer. So I couldn't exit it. I couldn't downsize it. I couldn't do anything. It literally just froze it.
And they didn't ask for money?
Nope.
Wonder why they did that.
I don't know.
Did you read it carefully?
Yeah.
And didn't say...
It did say child pornography or porn or whatever it did say on here. And it did have the logo, but it didn't say anything about money. It, I think it did have a number to contact, but at that point I just... And then they said it was a... Anyway, at that point, I just was just trying
the number,
to turn it off.
By the way, you know, all these things say different things. If you're in Europe, it says Interpol, not the FBI. It says, you know, it says euros, not dollars. The whole thing is it's highly customizable by the hacker who sends it out. So in this case, he wants you to call him. Now, what he'll say is, oh, I can fix this, but you're going to have to send me money because eventually that's what he wants. So now the real question is how badly he messed up your system, because he did. Now, some of this, there's a version of this called CryptoLocker. They don't even pretend to be the FBI. They say, we've scrambled all your data using strong encryption, and if you ever want to see your data again, you need to send us $300 in the next 72 hours, or we're going to erase the key. That doesn't sound like what happened to you, but that's one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is it could just be a malicious website who put this up to try to get money out of you. The fact that it locked up your computer sounds like you do actually have a virus on your system.
Okay.
If you reboot, can you start the system up again?
No, I couldn't. What I ended up doing is I called one of the tech guys, and I took out the battery, and then it came back on, and then they did a set of do a cleaning on it, which I use Revo. Have you heard of Revo?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so I use Revo, and I was able to get back on there. Now I'm at a point that I'm actually just afraid to, because the tech guy was saying that they can actually control your PC.
Well, what you don't know is what else they've put on there. And that's why, in general, you can use tools like Revo or Malwarebytes to remove stuff. But what you don't know is what else is there. And sometimes the stuff, maybe it doesn't say anything, it just kind of hides there and then waits till you take off your clothes and then takes a picture. So you're laughing, but you know what? Who knows what it's doing? I mean, mostly what they're trying to do is not even steal passwords or steal credit card numbers. They're mostly what people want to do is use your computer to attack other computers. They put together a botnet, and then that computer, they can blackmail people. They can say, if you don't give us money, we're going to bring your system down by attacking you with 5,000 computers, all of which we have commandeered without their owner's knowledge. That's the kind of thing where you really don't want they don't want Marie to know that this is on the system, right? So you don't know, and this is why, in general, what security experts say is once your system has been compromised, which your system definitely has, the only way to really be sure you're okay is to wipe the drive, erase it, and start over with a known good copy of Windows and reinstall.
Okay. Well, the girl was saying that whatever the name is, it was called Reviton and Citadel. I guess, yeah. I don't know what that is.
She's throwing around terms to make you impressed with her incredible knowledge and grasp of the situation. What did she suggest you do?
No, she just told me to take a look out for Reviton and Citadel.
How would you know? How would you know? Is it going to say, hi, this is Reviton. If you don't mind, would you take off your clothes so I can take a picture? What is it going to do? It's not going to tell you anything. Mm-hmm. How would you know? She's just throwing stuff around. Look out for Reviton and Citadel. What? It's not going to announce itself. So that's the problem, is there's bad stuff they put on your system that they let you know about. You saw that part. And that's where they try to extort money out of you. And then, you know, depending on how sneaky they are or how malicious they are, there may be bad stuff on your system that they don't want you to know about.
So they can actually control your
That is account. One thing that happens, yes. I don't know how widespread that is.
Wow.
The media loves that one because it's so, you know, so sexy. Bad guys can turn on your microphone and camera and watch you. But and I've seen articles, we've found a ring of guys who are doing this, and they're trading, you know, codes so that, hey, you want to see mine? I got a captive, you know. Maybe that's happening. I'm a little skeptical that it's as widespread. You know, media loves this stuff because it's, you know, it's generates ratings.
Okay.
Most often what happens is they take over your computer, make you part of a botnet without your knowledge, and sometime later in the year, they'll use you to attack a system. You know, come May Day, Memorial Day, what is it? Memorial Day is the Indy 500, right? May Day is Kentucky Derby. gambling sites take lots of bets on those days. So what they do is they call up, say, hello, I'm Bulgarian hacker. I have 5,000 computers poised and aimed at your site. It would be a shame if come the Kentucky Derby, you could not take bets. So give me $1 million. And then the site, you know, they blackmail them, they extort them. And you're part of that scheme. That's much more likely than the guys looking at you dancing around the house.
So then what do you recommend?
Well, that's the problem. You may not, the chances are very good there's nothing else on your system, to be honest. But you just don't know, and I don't blame you for being a little paranoid.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think of, like they told me McAfee or something called...
No, no, that's not going to do anything. Okay, yeah, you went to a nitwit. So an antivirus, those are antivirus programs. That's not really going to help you much either. Because this stuff, here's what you need to do. If you really want to feel better about it, do you have your system restore disks or your Windows disks that came with a computer?
Yeah.
You do?
I do.
Yay. So back up your data. It's a good opportunity to do that. Go get an external drive or whatever, a drive big enough to hold just your documents. You don't want to back up apps or anything else. Just back up your data. Then run the system restore disk and make sure you erase the drive before you do the restore. You want to scorched earth, blast the whole drive clean. Then reinstall. And then listen, because after this break, I'm going to come back and tell you how you can keep this from ever happening again. Because you can. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know, just go out and get McAfee and you'll be fine. Our show today brought to you by our friends at ProXPN. I love this, by the way. ProXPN, not bit by Heartbleed. ProXPN is a great way to avoid getting snockered on the information superhighway. It is an open VPN hosted system. That means, so when you're on an open access point or you're in a hotel or even when you're at home and, you know, you don't want your internet service provider snooping on what you're doing, you'd use a VPN. You'd use OpenVPN to protect your traffic as you're surfing the net. Now, one of the other advantages of doing this is when you eventually have to merge on the net as a public person, because otherwise, you know, Google or Yahoo or Facebook isn't going to know what the heck's going on. But you can choose where you want to merge on the net at one of their server locations, and they're all over the world. Dallas, Seattle, Los Angeles, New York City, but also London, Amsterdam, Singapore. That means any geographic restrictions on what you do are eliminated. You can literally be coming from any country on this list. They use OpenVPN, which is the best open source secure surfing solution. And the beauty of this is it's very affordable. I want you to visit proxpn.com/twit. proxpn.com/twit. You can see there various. There's a free solution. There's a premium solution. My suggestion is we're going to give you a great deal on the premium solution. You have 7 days to cancel, get a complete refund. So you're not stuck with this. So a good way to see if you like ProXPN. Normally it's $6.25 a month when billed annually. $75 a year, $10 a month if you go month to month. But we're going to give you a deal for 20% off, and not just for the first month, the first year, but for the life of your account. That means less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. All you have to do is use the Tech Guy offer code TG20. Tech Guy 20. They accept payments through Visa and PayPal and Bitcoin if you want to be really anonymous. ProXPN.com/twit. They have mobile apps for iOS and Android. You actually get OpenVPN on Android with their mobile app. And they're 20% off when you use the offer code TG20. Protect yourself. Protect your privacy. Surf the way you want to with ProXPN. ProXPN.com/twit. The offer code TG20. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK. Leo, that's the phone number. So let's assume you have now wiped your hard drive. Get rid of those bad guys. If you have Windows 8, by the way, this is even easier. You don't even have to have a disk. There's a Windows 8 refresh command that's awesome. They'll just wipe everything and start over again. It's kind of like, bring me back to the day I got you home. But earlier versions of Windows, often the manufacturer would provide a system recovery disk. Just make sure you don't recover in place. You want to erase the hard drive, install the recovery. Very first thing you do is run Windows Update and get it completely up to date, because you want to patch every exploit conceivable. So you'll have to set up the network access, log into your Wi-Fi router, for instance. But just before you go to any other website, go to windowsupdate.com. And get the latest updates, all the critical patches. This may take a while, depending on how old the computer is. You've got to catch up to modern times. It may require several reboots and so forth, but just continue to do it till it's completely up to date. By the way, this is nice because now you have a nice fresh machine. You know, all the months and years of bit rot of, you know, you're just starting from scratch, which is great. I do this anyway, just for fun. Just because don't reinstall apps you don't use. Just install your base apps that you know you're going to want, your Office suite or whatever. Then you can restore your data. Now, the question is, how do we keep this from happening again? Well, first of all, by putting all the updates in there, you're patching all the vulnerabilities on the operating system. But you've got to do the same thing for anything that goes on the internet. That means your browser, Internet Explorer or Chrome or Firefox, or Safari if you're on a Mac. That means you've got to have up-to-date versions of Adobe Reader, because that will load PDFs from websites. You don't want, you want to make sure that and bad guys know this, so they attack using Flash, using Reader. Make sure your Flash is up to date. If you don't need Flash or Reader, don't install them. That's even better. Java's another one. It's probably, depending on the machine, it's probably installed, but you want to make sure it's up to date. Or uninstall it, because you probably don't need it. Java's safe just on your computer by itself, but when you launch Java automatically in the browser, lots of problems can occur. All of because of errors in the programming code. So we're going to patch everything, anything that goes online. I would suggest that you not use Internet Explorer, use Google's Chrome browser, because it has Flash built in. It keeps itself up to date, Flash up to date. You don't have to think about it. I believe it's more secure than Internet Explorer. So I strongly recommend this. And if you're using Windows XP, you definitely have to do this, because Internet Explorer is not being updated. Chrome is, at least for another year. So use browse the Internet with Chrome and disable any Internet tools that you don't use or uninstall. And then the most important thing is to not run as an administrator. And you would not have got this bug in the first place, Marie, if you had been running as a limited user. Running as a limited user or a standard user, depending on which version of Windows, it's one or the other, means that the bad guys cannot install that stuff without you giving them an administrator password. They have the same permissions you do. In some cases, you wouldn't even be able to do it. You'd have to log out of your account, log into the new account, et cetera, et cetera. So really important, don't run as an administrative user. You'll want to create an administrative user account. Keep that around. Don't use it day to day, but have it. And then downgrade the account you're using right now. Downgrade it to limited user or standard user. Do not run as an administrator. By itself, that's the single most important thing you can do. So we've got three things. You update your system. Make sure it's kept up to date, including anything that goes online. Use Chrome as your browser and run as a limited user. Make sure you create an administrator account before you do that, so that you do have administrative access when you need it. Because you do, for installing stuff and things like that. An antivirus wouldn't hurt, though it's not necessary. Because really, it's backup protection. It doesn't prevent you from doing dumb things. And that's what gets you in trouble. Downloading software, running software from sites you shouldn't be. Now, sometimes you say, well, but that's my friend gave me that. Yeah, well, your friend might have been hacked. So don't open email attachments. Don't click links in email. Don't click links in Internet Explorer or rather Instant Messenger. If you need to go to your bank's website, don't click a link. Enter it by hand. It is so simple to do this, and it is possible to run completely safely, but it's a little less convenient, and that's really what happens is people trade security for convenience. Well, there's nothing more inconvenient than having to wipe your hard drive and reinstall and start over. So don't, please, it's the worst thing in the world. You do not want to get this stuff. You do not want to get this stuff. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. It's going to be okay, Marie. If I were you, just to give you peace of mind, you don't want to always think, gosh, I don't know if this computer is haunted or not. I would start over. I would wipe the drive and start over. It's a little bit of pain right now. But if you do that and then you do all the things I just said, you don't run as an administrator, you use Chrome, you keep the system up to date, you won't get another one. And you can kind of use your computer with the kind of the secure feeling that I guess I'm safe. We're going to have to add one more bit to this because of this Heartbleed virus. Start using a password manager. Not only protecting your computer system, but protecting your online accounts. Use a good password manager. LastPass is free. It's excellent. It'll keep track. It'll generate strong. Don't use the same password twice. No, no, no. Each site has its unique, strong password. Longer and more random is better. Let it generate a long, random password for you and keep track of it. The only password you have to remember now is the LastPass password. Make that a good one, but memorize it or write it down somewhere. And you're good. You're golden. LastPass.com. We're going to add that because I think now, thanks to this Heartbleed bug, that's one more thing we've got to do. Debbie is in Reading, Pennsylvania. Hi, Debbie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi.
Hey.
Oh, I've had satellite TV for a long time, and I'm trying to get an alternative situation where I don't have to spend that extra money for the satellite.
Yes.
Any
ideas? What we call a cord cutter.
Yeah.
You do need internet, though.
I do.
Because you can't cut the cord. Well, I mean, I shouldn't say that. Of course you can cut the cord without internet. You just won't get to watch anything.
Right.
But if you still want to see shows, movies, TV, the good news is most of that now is available over the internet. You don't have to get a satellite or a... Do you have internet access?
Yes.
Okay. Is it pretty good? Is it pretty fast?
I think it's 5 or 6.
Good. That's plenty.
Okay.
So, you know, Netflix, Hulu Plus... Amazon streaming, Vudu. There are lots of sites, and you know, each of them, it varies, but you can get movies on demand from Vudu, for instance, VUDU. That's, I think Walmart owns that. You can pay $8 a month for Netflix or Hulu Plus and watch TV and movies unlimited. Amazon also has movies on demand and television shows on demand. For most people, that's more than enough. There are a few things you might not get, like HBO Go, but that's a great way to start. And then who needs the cable anymore? We're getting it all over the internet. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So Harlequin asked a good question, and it speaks to why I'm always recommending LastPass. He says, well, what if LastPass gets hacked? LastPass, and Steve Gibson did a whole show on it, so listen to that if you want the full deets. But the way LastPass works is something that Steve calls trust no one. They don't have access to your data. Only you have access to your data. So even if they got hacked, the hacker would only get gibberish. So this is why we recommend LastPass. Steve vetted it fully, and it is the way LastPass is done is so elegant and nice. It's the right way to do it. And you don't have to. In fact, they did get bit by Heartbleed. They were using the OpenSSL library, and they fixed it very quickly, but it didn't matter because there was no way any bad guy using that to read their memory would have gotten anything of value, including your password, your login, any of that stuff. So LastPass is good. 1Password, RoboFoam, these are all fine. I haven't vetted them. I don't know, you know, how they do it or if they do it right. I know LastPass does everything right. And I trust LastPass. No, because you have local stores of your data as well. In fact, you can use LastPass in offline mode. Ah, thank you, Marsworm. Marsworm in our chat room has sent us a link to howtogeek.com, which is a great website. They have a guide to getting started with LastPass on there. That's what people need. I know this is a little challenging. A little challenging, but really worth it. Really worth it. And once you've started using LastPass, your security will go up exponentially. It's a really useful thing to do. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. I think we. Debbie, did I answer your question? Basically,
no.
It's an internet is the solution. Go ahead then.
Okay. Now, how do I get it from the internet, from the computer to the TV?
Well, that's an excellent question. If your TV doesn't already have internet connectivity, all new TVs do. You can get a box to connect to your TV that will give it internet connectivity. Apple sells one called Apple TV. Roku is a very good one. R-O-K-U from RokuLabs.com. About $99. Amazon just released one that also is quite good if you live in the Amazon universe. It's called the Fire TV, also $99. What these are is devices that hook up to your internet either via Wi-Fi or directly. Usually directly is better, but I know your TV may not be next to your cable modem or whatever it is you're using for internet access. So if it isn't, then use Wi-Fi. And then it will have a menu of all the different internet television things that I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I think for most people, now what unfortunately does happen is there are things you can't get that way. You can get Major League Baseball, but you can't get the NBA. Well, actually, you can get the NBA that way. You can't get the NFL that way, maybe. I mean, the Academy Awards, you're going to have to go to a friend's house.
Okay.
Things like that.
And no local programming.
For the most part, local, no. Although, we're in a transition period, and I think soon local programming is not going to be an issue. There was a company called Aereo that does this, that gives you local programming over the internet. They're being sued by every network in existence. And right now, we're waiting for a Supreme Court decision, frankly, on this one.
Mm.
But if you have an antenna, you can get local programming that way. If your antenna doesn't do the job, Aereo in some locales will do it. And I think we're going to see ways to get local programming without cable. This is cord cutting. It is not yet, the easiest thing in the world. There are things you may miss. For instance, if you wanted to watch HBO programming, HBO has an app. It's a wonderful app, but they require you have a cable or satellite subscription to HBO before you can use it, because they're afraid of irritating the cable companies and the satellite companies, because they need them still. But I think the day is not far off where HBO says, well, I guess we don't need them that much. Let's offer this for $10 a month. Because I tell you, there's a lot of people would pay for it.
So I'm not into HBO.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is not everything you get over your broadcast or your dish you're going to get, but much of it you can get, and certainly enough entertainment so you will never run out.
Right.
Just to maybe one individual show, you go, oh, I can't get that one. But between Amazon, Vudu, Hulu Plus, Netflix. Boy, there's a lot of stuff. It's hard to, and that's a total of $16 plus whatever you pay for your on-demand movies.
Okay.
It's not expensive.
And there's no way to take the things off of my DVR.
Yeah, you have to keep that those. And if you want to watch them. Yeah, until you're done watching them, I'd keep it.
Yeah, but I can't. If I ditch...
No, you have to keep your dish so that you can wash the stuff on the DVR. There's no way to move it off, really, no.
Oh, okay. Can I ask you one last question?
Sure.
About a printer setup? We have XP, and somebody was telling us about using something called Ubuntu.
Yeah, it's a Linux
free
operating system, much more secure, but it carries its own list of problems with it.
Okay.
If you really, really, really want to keep that hardware, you don't want to buy a new computer, you can even run XP safely if you do all those things I was talking about a minute ago. But Linux would be a very good choice. The computer generally runs better. Surfing the net is the same. Email's the same. They have free Office solutions.
Okay, do I have to do something else to my printer to be able to print using that?
Well, is your printer XP era, or did you get it more recently?
No, it's XP era.
I can't promise your printer will work. It probably will, but it may not be easy to get it working. It's just, it's hard to say. What kind of printer is it?
It's a Brother MFC8460N.
I bet you it'd work, but you'd have to do a little research on the Google and
okay.
see if there's Ubuntu support for that particular model.
Okay.
The irony of this is the older stuff is usually better supported than the newer stuff. So in all likelihood, it will be supported. This is kind of weird this way, but it's because Linux is basically a bunch of enthusiasts, and they have older stuff, and they say, well, I'm going to make sure my Brother printer works.
Oh, okay, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. So I would just Google that model and then Ubuntu and see what this says.
Okay. That's what I'm going to do. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right.
Yeah, a great adventure awaits. I got such hate mail from Linux fans who say, how could you not recommend Linux to people like Debbie because she would be so happy? And I just have to point out, and, you know, they disagree with me, but I just have to point out, Linux is generally an enthusiast's product still. There are lots of ways to, you know, you probably use Linux in some form or fashion, maybe on your Android phone that's based on Linux. The Google Chromebooks are a good choice. In fact, there's a way to use Linux that's really great, and you don't have to worry about it. You know, and it all works out of the box. But generally speaking, if you don't have a local expert you can call on Linux, and you're not really anxious to become a Linux expert, I'm not sure I'd recommend it for most people. I have to say, it's come a long way. It's a great solution. But don't let the enthusiasts sway you. We're going to get to David in Reseda, California, in just a little bit. And Dick DiBartolo, our gadget guru, is coming up. Wow, we got a jam-packed last segment. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. See, right here, this is a kind of, if that printer is in cups, it'll work on any Linux. And, oh, no problem. They have RPM and Deb downloads for Ubuntu for her printer. There's no problem. You know, she's not going to have any problem at all. Okay, easy as pie. I got to rest my case. Well, first you install cups. You know, that's the universal printing system. It's not a big deal. It's a simple, it's probably a DEB. Might be a RPM. You download that and you install it. And then you get the proper cups driver for that Brother printer. Now, it may not say Brother on it. You might have to use an LPT1, but if that's the case, simple as pie. And by pie, I mean 3.14159. Because Linux enthusiasts don't get it. That it's not for everyone. It really isn't. Oh, yeah. Now, you don't understand. It's as simple. It's easy. Anybody can do it. You have lost touch with real people, my friend. Shave the neck beard and join life.
You're like Gwyneth Paltrow or something. You just don't understand the real world.
You know, everybody has a nanny. You just give the child to the nanny.
Problem
I don't understand
solved.
Why that's so hard. Our show today is brought to you by Gazelle.com. People often wonder, how is it, Leo? How is it you always seem to have the newest phone? Well, because I sell the old crap. That's how, and I get good money for it at Gazelle. See, if you've been piling up old phones in a drawer or the closet, you're wasting money. There's cash in that there drawer. How about you got an iPhone? Let's say you got an iPhone 5. Many of you on AT&T, right? And we're just going to see. Go to Gazelle.com. You can get a quote. Good condition. If unlocked, it's $230, and they even tell you how to unlock it. You have to do it through your AT&T account. $190 if it's locked. That's cash in your pocket, my friends. It's enough to buy a new iPhone, that's for sure. Go to Gazelle.com. You can trade in your iPhone, your iPad. They'll even buy broken iPhones or iPads. But they'll also go for BlackBerry, HTC, LG, Motorola, Nokia, and Samsung phones. They'll buy tablets from a variety of manufacturers. Getting ready for the Nexus 10. Well, now here's the thing. You don't know if the Nexus 10 is coming. We've only heard rumors. But what you could do is go there and get a quote now. Lock that quote in for 30 days. then you've got, you know it's not, that offer's not going to go down. There's $111 right in your pocket. And I'm sure that once a new Nexus 10 comes out, that price will go down. But you've got it locked in for 30 days. Once you decide you want to pull the trigger, you've got a bunch of stuff, say check out. They'll send you a prepaid mailer, a box you can pile that stuff in. You don't pay the postage on anything worth more than a buck. So basically that means you're just going to mail them all that stuff. And they're going to turn it around. They're going to send you a check. By the way, if you forget to wipe the data, sometimes people do that. Don't worry. They'll wipe it for you. They'll send you a check or a PayPal credit or an Amazon gift card. That's a good deal because you get 5% extra on the Amazon gift card. Fast turnaround. Great prices. Look, it's not making money sitting in your drawer. Get it now from Gazelle. That's why Gazelle's paid out more than $100 million so far to 700,000 customers. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. Gazelle.com. They're waiting for you. Hey, it's Dickie D. Dick DiBartolo is here, Mad Magazine's maddest writer and a gadget fiend. That's why we call him the Gizwiz. Hello, Dickie D.
How are you, sir?
I am well indeed.
Good. Good, good.
How are you? Is spring come to Manhattan?
Spring has finally come. It's like 72 degrees.
Yay.
And there are, I think, 1.2 million people in Riverside Park.
Yeah, yeah. That probably is the case.
I don't know why they let kids in the parks. They just ruin it. It just, yeah, exactly.
Every swing is occupied. You cannot get on a swing to save your life.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And your sandbox... The Leo Laporte Memorial Sandbox. You can't get near it.
That is my... Do they have a little plaque? Do they have a little plaque on there?
Yeah, they have a little picture of
Leo Laporte potted sand here.
And they have a giant mouth, and it's a fountain. Yeah. I thought it's very apropos.
Ah! So, Dickie D, what do you got for us? You always come with such interesting gadgets.
Yeah, a couple of things from Satachi. They make great little add-on accessories, and they have two that I like. One is called the Smart Monitor Stand. So this is a computer stand, a computer monitor stand, so you can raise your monitor to a height that's better for your eyes or your posture. There's two levels, a high and low. But what's neat about it is it comes with a couple of cables that hook to the back of your computer, and then at the front of the stand you have four USB 2.0 ports, and you have a place for a mic and a headphone. So instead of having to reach behind the monitor or under your desk, everything is right at eye level, right underneath your monitor. That's coming shortly, and that's going to be... Intro price is going to be $35. And you can sign up at Satachi.com.
Okay. I know you call it Satachi, but no one's going to be able to find it if you say it that way. It's Satechi, S-A-T.
I asked the PR lady. She said, no, it's Satachi.
She said it's Satachi, but it's spelled...
Yes. I know. It's S-A-T-E-C-H-I.
How do you pronounce, ladies and gentlemen of the jury... I ask you, how do you pronounce the word S-A-T-E-C-H-I? Oh, yeah, of course, Satachi. Perfect.
No, I know it's the first time I ever used Satachi. I always say Satechi.
Satechi.
Yeah.
She's wrong. They need a new PR lady. Who's going to be able to find that?
That's true. That's true.
Although it's like Hitachi, only different.
Yeah, but then if you say Satechi, they might type S-I-R. Like,
truthfully, they need a better name, period.
Yeah, they do. And the other little guy is if you're using 3.0 USB, they have a 10-port USB add-on device. And I have a question about that. I have one. Very good looking. It has a iPod tablet charger at one end. Each three sets of USB 3.0 ports can be turned on and off.
I use this. I love it.
Yeah, okay. But Leo, sometimes when I plug in a 2.0 device, it doesn't read it.
Oh.
So, and I heard somewhere that not every 2.0 gadget will work on 3.0.
Oh, really? That's weird.
Yeah, I thought, you know, everything was
well,
back.
Well, I'll be honest with you, Dick. I don't use 2.0. I just...
Oh, it's way beyond.
Yes, I only use 3.0, so I don't have any experience in what you're talking
about. Yeah, well, Lisa happens to be using 4.0.
Yes, we're moving to 4.0 tomorrow. No, I don't have the Satechi. I have something very similar. I think...
Oh, okay.
I think it's the same hardware. I think Satechi's rebranding it, but... it works quite well. I haven't had any trouble with 2 or 3. Maybe you have a bad unit.
That could be. Well, I would not get personal here.
And you recommended their desk lamps to me, and I bought that. I've been very happy with Satechi.
Yes, yes, and that they have a new desk lamp out. No, it's a great company, except for the name.
Yeah, yeah.
That's their slogan. We build great stuff. Everything we do is great, except our name.
Just try and find it on the internet. Satechi. Satechi. She didn't tell you that. She couldn't possibly have told you that's how it's pronounced. Of all the possible pronunciations, that's not.
Yeah, well,
no?
Really? No, I said, is it pronounced Emerson? She said, no.
It's Chardet.
Chardet.
You'll find Dick at gizwiz.biz. Actually, if you ever hear him recommend something and you want to know where to find it, he's got links always on his webpage. Gizwiz.biz, plus a chance to play the What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win an autographed copy of
Matt. And for the first time, you can see what you're playing for.
What do you mean? Oh, you've got the picture there.
The new cover was just released.
Let's go
look. So it's the June issue.
The June issue. And, it's for dads and grads.
Yeah.
I like it. The head of the class issue, and there's Alfred E. Newman at the head of his class.
Yeah, and in that issue, I have things Target is doing to protect your identity. New things Target is doing.
This is good because they know you're the geek in the bunch. I bet you're the geekiest guy at Mad Magazine.
Could be. It could be.
Yeah. And so they have you write the geeky stories.
Right. Yeah. The first one, Target is immediately switching from the free version of their antivirus to the pay version. So you know they're serious.
Yes.
Yes.
They're serious. All right, Dick, hang on. We're going to do the Giz Fizz after the radio show on this TwitNetcast network. David is in Reseda, I think, our last call of the day. Hi, David. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. So this is kind of hard to explain. I usually do this on Twitter.
Do it in 140 characters. It should be easy.
No. Okay, let me explain. So when I quote an article like from RT or from KFI or something, you know how the article pops out with something else like I could tweet with, right?
Yeah, it's called a URL shortener. They turn it into a t.co address. That's so it doesn't take up so much space on the tweet.
I don't know how to do that, and I see some people do it with Tumblr.
It'll do it automatic. Well, there's two ways. You could do it manually. If you go to bit.ly, that's a URL shortener. You could paste the URL in and get a bit.ly URL out of it, which you'd paste in. But if you use the Twitter website or a Twitter client, a lot of people are using Twitter clients. Many of them will do that automatically. And then so you enter in an address. And I'm trying to remember on the Twitter website, I think there's a command to shorten URLs. You need to look for it. And then you can turn those long. And that way, you know, you only have 140 characters. If a web address is 89 characters, you're not going to have room for anything else. So it turns it into short addresses, t.co addresses. Yeah, and I highly recommend that. There is a disadvantage to URL shortening that I don't like, and that is it's not immediately apparent where you're going, and that's risky. When you click on links, see, there's danger there. We've talked about that before. If you look at the link and you know, oh, I'm going to the Financial Times or KFI Radio, then you know, well, I'm all right. But if you see a t.co URL, you don't always know. Now, what Twitter does in its own client and on its website is expand that t.co to the actual site, so you do know where you're going. But not everybody does that. So I think you need it if you want to do short tweets. If you want to do it manually, bit.ly is a great sign. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the TwitNetcast network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.